The last case on our calendar is 05556, Lynn Seeger versus For Women, Inc. Mr. Gora.
Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Felix Gora, and I represent Good Samaritan Hospital, TriHealth, and Dr. Wozniak. We are defendants appellants in this case. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Watch your time.
And Stephanie Frankowitz, who represents co-appellants, will be arguing the rebuttal portion of our argument. The issue here today is when is an action commenced or attempted to be commenced for purposes of application of statute of limitations. The Court of Appeals decision in this case states that an action is commenced simply by filing a complaint. That's it. No matter that plaintiff told the clerk, do not serve. The concurring opinion in this case by the First District Court of Appeals suggested that, in fact, the Court of Appeals should junk the stamp, that they don't have the authority to not serve. So therefore, even though the clerk followed the instructions of plaintiff, they shouldn't have. And finally, the Court of Appeals stated, since we're not dealing with the situation concerning the savings statute, we're not going to address that issue. That's for another day. This court has not been confronted with those specific facts before. It has been confronted with facts which we believe apply to this case and mandate the result. The first decision by this court is Goolsbee. And in Goolsbee, this court looked at a factual situation where the plaintiff filed their complaint 7 months early, told the clerk not to serve. The clerk didn't serve. 2 days before the statute ran, plaintiff said, okay, now serve. And the clerk started the process for serving. In Goolsbee, this court said, well, since there was commencement by filing before the statute of limitations and a command to serve or not staying in the way of service, a demand for service, you've met the statute of limitations requirements. Interestingly, in Goolsbee, the court did not say, clerk, you're not permitted to ignore the instructions. You can't not serve. What Goolsbee said was, since they filed within the statute and demanded service within the statute, it's okay.
That would really have been no different than filing the complaint the 2 days before.
That's correct, and that's what this court stated. In essence, the delay was something you requested, plaintiff, which you received from the clerk. You then recognize that you had to file within the statute and demand service, which you did, and that's okay. The next case, then, was a 1995 case. This court decided Motorists, decision authored by Justice Pfeiffer. And that decision says, in that case, the plaintiff filed. They said to the clerk, we want to serve. We want to take care of service. The clerk said, okay, you're permitted to do that. The plaintiff never did. They sat on it, it never happened. And then the plaintiff dismissed. They counted on the savings statute to save them. And this court in Motorists says, you can't. Why can't you? Because while there was filing, there was no attempted service. You stopped, you didn't demand service, you stood in the way of service, therefore the statute ran. Therefore, you don't get the application of the savings statute. And I think the language of this court is very instructive. It says, the mere filing of a complaint does not constitute an attempted commencement. Service is too vital a part of commencement of a lawsuit for a party to be deemed to have attempted commencement without even attempting service. And another important point, which is directly applicable to this case, a savings statute is not to be used as a method for tolling the statute of limitations. If, in fact, the First District Court of Appeals decision is followed, you are now permitting a plaintiff to toll the statute of limitations, frankly, up to 3 years. And that's in the discretion of the plaintiff, and I'll illustrate how that can happen later. The last case, which is illustrative for this decision and on these facts, is this court's decision in Motorists, which was a 1997 decision. That decision says you have to read Rule 3 with Rule 4 and read all of the rules in peri materiae. You just can't take 3 in and of itself. And what the Court of Appeals did in this case is to read 3 by itself. Well, since they filed the complaint, that's all we're going to be concerned about. But you have to look beyond Rule 3. You have to look at Rule 4, Rule 4E, Rule 4.6E, which says it's the ultimate responsibility of the plaintiff to make sure service happens. And so what has happened below is that the Court of Appeals has taken Rule 3 in isolation and said, simply by filing a complaint, that's all you need to do. You don't need to demand service. In fact, we're going to let you tell the clerk, don't serve.
Even if we agree that that's not a desirable practice, here, by delaying only 4 months, the service was made within a year, within the time it's required. Don't we still have to, even if we disagree with the conduct of the plaintiff, and I have some problem with it. I think just Judge Painter's cryptic statement about get rid of that stamp, the clerk's office is pretty good advice, but our rule may need to be, our rules may need to be clarified so that if there are enough of us who think this is not, that the plaintiff should not control, and 4E says forthwith the clerk shall issue the summons, and yet we're permitting a plaintiff to control that duty on the part of the clerk, which seems to me to be a little incongruous. But given all that, don't they still win because they gave the instruction to the clerk within enough time to get it done?
Chief Justice, I don't believe so for two reasons. First, in terms of whether the stamp should be scrapped, I think it's been common practice. It happened when it has always happened when the General Assembly has changed some of the laws. Plaintiff's counsel naturally go and file lots of complaints that happened under tort reform and said, do not serve. It's common practice. Second, Rule 4A, I think, permits that to happen. Rule 4A says, upon request of the plaintiff, separate or additional summonses shall be issued at any time against any defendant. I think that's the language which permits a clerk to say, well, you told me not to serve, and okay, it's your decision. Last, if you permit this Court of Appeals rule to stand, you created a dual track, two roads. What you've said is, okay, if we permit a plaintiff to file and say, do not serve, and as long as they get it done within 6 months, that's one road you can take. So plaintiffs, if you think you're going to instruct to serve within 6 months because of Rule 4E, go ahead and take that track. But if you think that you may have to rely on the savings statute and no service is going to be attempted, don't do that, because if you dismiss or the court dismisses under this court's decision in Motorists, you're out of luck. You're out of luck because there's been no attempted commencement of the action. Therefore, there's no application of the savings statute.
So, counsel, it doesn't matter if the clerk makes an attempt to serve prior to the expiration of the statutory time. It's just the clerk is not precluded or prohibited by virtue of instructions from the plaintiff.
That is correct. The key point is you file and you don't stand in the way of service. And in fact, that's why I think the old statute, the revised code statute, the precipe requirement was done away with. That original statute said you have to file your complaint and then issue a precipe requesting service of the clerk. And I think the decision to do away with that was, let's take the onus off the plaintiff. Let's remove that step, because we don't want them to make a faux pas by mistake. Once you file your complaint, the rule says the clerk will serve it for you. But what happens when you specifically affirmatively tell the clerk, do not serve?
So even if the complaint was filed 2 days before the expiration of the statute of limitations, as long as there's no impediment.
That is correct.
By virtue of the plaintiffs.
And I think this court, in its 1964 case, dealing with what happens when the clerk doesn't serve it until after it's filed, this court said, well, that's issues of service, how service is perfected, not commencement of the lawsuit, and that's different. So yes, as long as you file it on the last day of the statute and do not stand in the way of service.
But you're asking us to put the service requirement back in. That's been taken out. We've come through that. You want it to be, you must file and commence within the period.
Your Honor, what
that rule doesn't say that.
Your Honor, what I'm suggesting is that you must file and not stand in the way of service by instructing the clerk not serve.
How is any defendant prejudiced if, in fact, the only requirement is, as the Chief Justice pointed out, you must file within the period of the limitations and obtain service within 1 year? We have a filing prior to the expiration of the statute, and we have service within 1 year.
Your Honor, what you do not have is you do not have the ability of the clerk to forthwith serve. You've stopped the
but,
working.
But if we have a 12 calendar month period, what prejudice falls to any defendant?
Your Honor, if one looks at prejudice, what you've converted the statute of limitations to is into an equitable tolling argument.
No, I haven't converted it. You want it to be something that it isn't. The statute only, the rule only says you must file and obtain service within a year. You want it to be you must file and commence within the period of the filing, it seems to me.
And, Your Honor, that's what Motorist says. You must commence or attempt commencement within the statute of limitations. When you prevent commencement, which is service, when you prevent that starting, you've missed the statute of limitations. You haven't.
Maybe you haven't prevented it. Maybe you've delayed it.
And, Your Honor, if you delay it, you have prevented it because you have allowed the plaintiff to control up to 3 years when that's served. You have frustrated the purpose of Goolsbee. You have frustrated the purpose of Motorist. And Motorist says,
If the only requirement, though, is 1 year and it's done within the year, why should we care if it's in the first month, the fourth month, or the 11th month?
Because, Your Honor, it's two different arguments. It deals with perfection of service versus commencement of the lawsuit. There is to be an orderly provision for service. That's in the civil rules. That's completely different than commencement of a lawsuit. If you let the clerk do their job and don't stand in the way, you will have a lawsuit which is timely answered, and it goes on. And if, in fact, you can't serve the defendant's concealed, there's all kinds of cases that would deal with that.
So you're back to the Chief Justice's point about we should instruct clerks to ignore requests from counsel not to serve special service or anything else. We should have the clerks forthwith undertake service. And isn't your argument really with the clerk in deferring in this instance and not... Well, you should have perhaps requested a mandamus to have the clerk perform his or her obligation.
But, Your Honor, that requires the duty be the clerk's, and the duty is not the clerk's if the plaintiff's counsel tells him don't serve.
You think the duty isn't with the clerk when the rule says the clerk shall forthwith? That's not a clerk duty?
Your Honor, it's just like the appellate rules in terms of the dockets. It's the clerk's duty to make sure that the docket's in place and transferred to the Court of Appeals. But the ultimate responsibility is the plaintiff's counsel's. Just like it's plaintiff's counsel or the appellant's counsel in that instance. Just like it's plaintiff's counsel in this case to not stand in the way of what the clerk's duty is.
Go ahead and finish.
And in Goolsbee, this court said, it didn't say clerk... You had to serve it within when it was filed 7 months before the statute. What this court said in Goolsbee is, since you filed it and attempted or didn't stand in the way of service 2 days before the statute, that's what's important and that's what's effective. Not that, by the way, the clerk shouldn't have listened to plaintiff's counsel should have served it anyway.
So this only becomes important when there's a missed opportunity because the statute has run and service had not been attempted, or service has not been attempted because the plaintiff impeded it by instructing the clerk and then wants to dismiss for a saving statute catch or save here.
Your Honor, I think if the plaintiff counsel instructs not to serve, the statute's run. And in this case, it was a four-month delay, and since there was no service, there's no ability to rehabilitate that case, the statute is run.
And I understand your argument there, but basically, plaintiff is instructing the clerk at plaintiff's peril
that
when
is-
they do any kind of special instruction. Now, special instructions pursuant to the rule could be, this is the address, but serve him or her at this place, as opposed to the address on the complaint. And, I mean, those are anticipated as special instructions pursuant to the rule. And you're saying that, you're not saying that a plaintiff is precluded from saying to the clerk, delay service, it's just if they do so, they're doing it at their own peril.
That is correct, Your Honor.
Mr. Gore, is it your view that the service needed to have been obtained in this case by March 29th, 03? I mean, I think it was filed on the 27th with 2 days to go on the statute. Did you think that service needed to be made before the statute expired?
No, Your Honor.
You didn't?
No.
So service could have been made at some point after the statute, March 29th, expired?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
Which it was in this case.
Your Honor, the complaint and the request for commencement of the action was not made within the statute of limitations. There are lots of cases which are filed outside the limitations which affect service, but they're subject to dismissal because the statute of limitations is run. Two different issues, two different arguments. It's not perfection of service. Is was this action commenced within the statute of limitations? That's the issue. And if one focuses on service only, that has nothing to do with this case.
Okay.
Because you do get a year to serve, but it has to be timely filed. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Mr. Gore. Mr. Spell.
Thank you, Chief Justice Moyer. May it please the court. My name is Dan Sproul. I represent the appellee, Mrs. Seeger. Mrs. Seeger was a 42-year-old woman who underwent a hysterectomy and had her ureter stitched, closed during the operation. She had immediate problems in the emergency room. The next day, a urologist was brought in by the appellants to try and correct the problem. She underwent six corrective surgeries, and at this point, she still suffers permanent impairment, still incontinence and pain and difficulty urinating and permanent scarring of the ureter.
Counsel, why would you say do not serve? What's the reason for filing and telling the clerk not to serve?
In this case, the reason, Justice, that we did not serve immediately is because, first of all, the rules allow for service within a year of the date of filing, and there were reasons that she needed additional time. The main reasons were she was still experiencing problems. She had been told by her doctors that she needed additional corrective surgeries. She had lost her job over this. She had lost her insurance. She couldn't afford the additional surgeries. And we didn't know if the additional surgeries were going to cure the problem or if she had a permanent problem that would not go away.
So based on your understanding of the rules, you believe there was an advantageous delay that you could obtain by asking the clerk not, or telling the clerk not to serve?
Absolutely, and the reason that we thought that, Your Honor, is first of all, because the rules provide what is commencement. Commencement, as this court has been discussing with my colleague, is filing if you obtain service within a year. That's all that the rule requires. The staff notes indicate that's all the rule requires.
But doesn't it require the clerk to serve forthwith?
Well, unless instructed contrary by the plaintiffs, but I agree that we do it at our peril if we say don't serve, but the peril is then you don't accomplish the service within the year that the rule allows. And I would further say this court in many, many instances has said the definition of commencement is filing if service is obtained within a year. I submit that the bar has to be able to rely upon both the rules as written and the announcements of the court that have come out. This
Counsel,
court.
Counsel, let me ask you a follow-up on Judge Lansinger's question about the rationale for the delay, the instructions to delay. Was she still treating with the same doctors and medical facilities that are subject of the suit?
Initially she was, but
and
then
so
she changed.
Were you afraid that they would drop her as a patient, or that there would be some kind of repercussions if they knew that they were being sued by the patient that they continued to treat?
Initially, that's true. And then she switched to the urologist that they assigned to try and correct the problem. We also thought that, you know, if she attacks the original care, that the people who were appointed by the appellants to try and correct the problem may have some reluctance
but
to cure
it. But wasn't
there
a 180-day letter sent to these medical providers?
Yes.
So what are you accomplishing here when you put them on notice that a suit's coming, and then to delay the I don't understand what that accomplishes.
Unfortunately, the 180-day letter is necessary or you lose your right to stand, but it preserves the right to not file, as does filing and not serving within a year preserves the right not to ultimately commence, so that if, for example, in this case, the records were unclear as to who stitched Mrs. Seeger's ureter. Was it the resident who did do some stitching, or was it the principal gynecologist? We didn't know the answer to that. The records don't show it. We asked the hospital representative to let us know who actually did that stitching. That would have allowed to dismiss or to not ultimately commence against a peripheral party, such as if the resident didn't have anything to do with the stitching, we would not have ultimately commenced against the resident, we would not have ultimately commenced against the hospital or against TriHealth, their parent company. That's really the reason for doing this. And there are other reasons in other cases for following this procedure too. If I may, I would like to just point out a couple other reasons. First, I've discussed what happens if you have a multiple party and you don't know who the culprit is, and you don't want to ultimately commence against peripheral parties. Also, the plaintiff's condition may improve to the point where she decides it's not worth going through the great expense and the great expenditure of time that it requires to proceed with these cases. Nothing would have been better than she had ultimate resolution and she had no further need for a lawsuit to resolve the damages that are permanent.
She could dismiss her complaint.
Well, she could. We prefer not to ultimately commence against somebody if we just
appreciate that. I guess what concerns me is that the General Assembly has set the policy of the law and said this is the statute of limitations for filing this kind of action, but the plaintiffs have found a way to certain plaintiffs who file in this way. They tell the clerk, well, statute is X, but we're going to go beyond the statute, even beyond the rule, by engaging in this conduct, if you will. What's your response to that?
Thank you, Chief Justice. I would say we're not going beyond the rule. We're complying with the rule if we file within the statute and we get service within a year. That's what the rule requires. That's what this court said the definition of commencement is in Motorist Mutual in 1995, and Goolsbee in 1991, and Mary Hugh v. Yova in 1984, and Lash v. Miller in 1977, and Cecil v. Cottrell in 1993, and in Baker and McKnight in 1983.
So your take on Motorist would be that it supports your position rather than
Yes, Your Honor, because the opinion announced by the court, which I know that you authored, indicates that that's the definition of commencement. It's always been the definition of commencement since the adoption of the rules. Now, I would say this too, Your Honor, in response to your question, Chief Justice, that the federal rules always said commencement is just filing. There was no issue of if this contingency if you get service within a certain period of time. They do have a provision that you have to get service within 120 days, or you have to ask for additional time to do it, but that doesn't affect the commencement.
In well, Ohio- Mr. Sproul, you told me earlier that there was a limitation, but Rule 4 says, upon the filing of the complaint, the clerk shall forthwith issue summons for service on each defendant.
Yes, Your Honor.
It says, on request of the plaintiff, separate summons or additional summons shall issue. It doesn't say, or a delay of that service shall be affected. It says a separate or an additional.
Thank you, Justice.
Is there another provision that I'm unaware of?
Well, I would suggest this. The second provision of 4A says, upon request of a counsel, separate or additional service may be requested. And that is modifying the first sentence, which talks about the time for the issuance of the summons. In addition, I would say, yes, 4.1 offers different methods of service. Their argument really is that you have to allow the clerk of courts to immediately serve a defendant, if you don't, and the statute subsequently runs before you get service within the year, you've violated the statute of limitations. But 4.1 says clerk of court service is not the only method of service. You can have service by either personal or residence service, by the appointment of any process server over the age of 18, by a deputy sheriff, by a bailiff. But as
Justice O'Donnell points out, it doesn't say you can delay service. It says you can obtain different methods, not delay. And in if we go with the way the Court of Appeals rule, don't you have somebody who can file on the last day of the statute of limitations, request no service until the last day of the year, and effectively get a 3-year statute of limitations with no notice? Let's take it out of a malpractice case, no notice to a defendant that he's being sued.
No, I don't believe it can go to 3 years, but I
how,
do.
How can it not? If you file on the last day and you don't ask for service until the last day, you're still within the 1 year for getting service.
Well, now, are you asking if there is a refiling and a question under the savings statute?
You have 2 years. You file on the last day of your statute of limitations.
Oh, I'm sorry. Because
you have 1 year now to get service under your theory, and so you get service on the very last day, and that's the first time the defendant's ever learned of it. Now you have a 3-year statute of limitations.
The reason I answered your question initially that I don't believe the 3 years is true because, obviously, in this type of case, it's not a 2-year statute of limitations.
But we have to write this for every case, and if you take it out of a malpractice, that effectively would be a 3-year statute of limitations, would it not?
This court has repeatedly said that regardless of when you file, even if it's the last day under the statute, you have a year to serve. There are many cases in which this court has said exactly that.
You have a year to complete service.
Well, it doesn't really say complete service. It says complete service within a year, yes.
Which you have a year to complete service.
Obtain service.
Coupled with the reading of the statute that puts a duty now under the new system on the clerk of courts to forthwith serve. There's nothing in that statute that says that you have a right to tell them not to forthwith serve. You can do additional or other ways, but not serve at all.
If I may, the way this has all come about in this state, interpreting the federal rules, people did request extensions of their 120 days and got extended time. People observed that the rules say that that commencement is defined as filing in service within a year. Commentators in the 80s commented that it is possible to not have the automatic service. And as long as you get service within a year, you comply. Some commentators thought that was a good thing. Some thought it was a bad thing. But the practitioners in the state started doing it. And in many reported cases, it's been done. And I would suggest that several examples are Scott v. Orlando in 1981, Goolsby in 1991, Hecker v. Norfolk in 1993, Motorist Mutual in 1995, Federhoff in 1995. So the commentators said that it was a vehicle available. Some said maybe the rules should be changed. Some say that we should revert to the federal rules where filing is commencement, and then it's only an issue of have you prosecuted the action timely in the method of service that you've taken. So the commencement wouldn't be even at issue if the commentators who suggest going to the commencement being just filing were allowed. But I think that this court, in its adoption of the rules, has struck a good compromise. The compromise is commencement is filing if you obtain service within the year. That's the only condition that the rule states. The appellants ask for an additional condition, and that is that you have to allow the automatic type of service to go forward initially. That's a change of the rules. I submit that to do so in retrospect here, or to define the terms in retrospect here to accomplish that, would violate the tripartite test for overturning precedent announced in Galatis and International Paper versus Trzcinski, because overruling this court's announced definitions of commencement, first of all, the decisions were not wrong. They were in compliance with the statute. It does not defy practical workability. It's been done since at least the early 80s without any problem. And in this case, it doesn't present a problem, as this court has recognized that there was service within 4 months, which would have been allowed in any event under the rules.
Do you find clerks generally defer to counsel who don't want service made in cases?
Well, I know that in Hamilton County, our court has this stamp, which it has adopted. I know that other courts do. It would be a simple thing. I suppose, for this court to amend the rules or to ask the newly established Commission on Rules to evaluate it to determine, you know, whether there's something more than the things that Civil 3A require for commencement to be added. But you could have asked
for any of those other alternate methods of service. Yeah, I mean, you could have done it yourself. Yes. Could have asked the special process server. Someone in your office could have done this. Then you could have done
it. Yes, and then we have a whole year to do it.
Of course. But that wasn't the case. And I guess all we're looking at is what does the rule require, and if in fact it is the clerk to effect service, should not the clerk do it in conformity with what the rule provides, without some direction unanticipated by the language in the rule?
I suppose, Justice, that if you rule that the clerk cannot listen to the instructions of counsel as to service, or if you amend the rules to say so, that in this instance, the clerk should have filed then, and so we still don't.
And what will happen is you'll ask to make personal service or make service yourself in conformity with the rule, and you'll do it.
Personally, I think I'm going to abandon the process because it's been such a nightmare for me here.
Well, you've gotten here, though. Isn't this a great opportunity? Huh?
Well, now we're delayed way more than a year. And the last prong of Galatis, that a change would create undue hardship on litigants, where it's been a process, a procedure that's been done in the state, and in reliance upon the rules in this court's definition of commencement, and if it's changed, I certainly hope that it wouldn't be done in retrospect, that it would be done in a considered analysis of the rules, and that I brought the Green Book because it indicates you just established the new Commission on Rules that is effective January 1st, that could study such proposed changes in the rules. And then, as your website says, proposed changes should be vetted through the public process and giving people an opportunity to respond to indicate why they think it's a good or bad idea. And we would obviously be bound by whatever the court determines in adoption of whatever the commission determines is the appropriate thing in the future. But I think that it's that an ex post facto or a retrospective amendment that changes the definition of commencement isn't fair, doesn't comply with due process, and presents more problems than it solves.
We're going to write law here that is different than what you suggest it should be. What you're saying is make it prospective. Is that right?
Thank
essentially
you.
What you're
doing. Exactly.
Don't penalize you for
thank
for
you.
Doing what everybody's been
thank
doing
you.
In the first district for years that causes a stamp to be created. Thank you, Mr. Sproul.
Thank you.
Ms. Frankowitz, Mr. Gora used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just want to address the issue that Justice O'Donnell was bringing up. The problem that is created when you allow a person to take the entire time for 3A without demanding service before the statute expires is, let's say the first district opinion is upheld, and you have two plaintiffs. One says, they both say, do not serve. And the time goes by, the statute of limitations expires. Then 4E, 6 months goes by. And you have two different courts, one that polices their dockets under 4E and looks at cases that have not been served and dismisses them when they haven't been served. Then you have another court who does not pay attention to their docket under 4E. So what happens is you've got this court who says, under Goolsbee, this court has said, and under this scenario, when you say do not serve, this case is dismissed. Well, what happens with that plaintiff is it's not without prejudice. It's with prejudice, because when they come back around a year later to refile under the savings statute, then Thomas versus Freeman comes in, that analysis of attempt to commence. Did you file and demand service within the statute? No, I didn't. I filed, but I told the clerk, do not serve. And a demand for service for a plaintiff couldn't be any easier under the rules as they stand now to complete. 4A simply requires, get out of the way of our rule. Don't tell us do not serve, but if you do, you do so at your own peril, and you'd better be paying attention to the statute of limitations and tell us to serve.
But that didn't happen here.
That didn't happen here, and that's the whole point. Exactly.
No, they said, it didn't happen here that the judge looked at his docket or her docket and dismissed.
That's
after 6 months had gone by.
That's correct, Your Honor, because they had gotten service before the six month. But what we're looking at is what is the effect that this law is going to have across the state, and it's going to happen. I've had it happen to other clients of mine where they weren't served for 11 months, and then they were served in the 11th hour, and then the plaintiff dismissed the case 10 days later under 41A, refiled it a year later under the savings statute. So it's just, it doesn't work. And then the other trap, Justice O'Donnell, is that it can lead to 3 years. If a plaintiff says, I've got the entire year under 3A, and they take it. Well, if the court said I could take 3A, then I must be able to dismiss under 41A without penalty. So they do so. They wait another year under the savings statute, and they refile again, telling the clerk again, do not serve for another year. As long as I get it by that 365th day, I've met the requirements of the rule. That's the delay of 3 years. That's extending the statute of limitations 3 additional years. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Frankowitz. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. Marshal, will please adjourn court.
All rise. Thank you.